Following audio drama is rated PG for parental guidance. You should experience lots of explosions with no body parts. Parents should be ready to cover their ears.
They don't appear to be
This is a Look and See audio production, where entertainment is always free.
And now, it's time for the Broken Sea Audio Production, OTR Swag Cast.
And now for part two of the focus on the General Mills Radio Adventure Theatre on the Swag Cast.
Good evening, dear listeners. I am Barnabas Collins. Please allow me to introduce the next haunting episode of Dark Shadows.
I have your report, Your Honor. Yes, it's exactly what I wanted. That's good. Keep sending anything else you can dig up. Right. Okay. Fine.
As quickly as I could.
I'm sorry to have asked you to come on such short notice.
Well, that's all right, but I have to get back soon because of the marriage, the wedding.
What I have to say may affect the wedding.
What is it?
Vicky, I know how upset you've been. I know what this wedding is doing to everyone. So I took it upon myself to do something. I've had some investigators on it.
What did you find out?
Jason McGuire has an international reputation.
What?
Oh, he's never been in jail. But he's been so close to it that I almost admire him for his agility. I have reports here from Hong Kong, Rio, Marseille, you name it.
What's he done?
He's been accused of smuggling, swindling, extortion, but they've never had enough proof to prosecute him.
With a reputation like that, why wasn't he at least detained?
Because of insufficient evidence. Because he frequently skipped the country, and without evidence, they couldn't extradite him.
What does all this mean?
It means that he's wanted in several places. They feel that if they can question him again, they might be able to break through his alibis.
But can he be arrested?
Arrested, no. But the minute he sets foot in any of those countries, he'll be picked up.
What does that have to do with the wedding?
I want to submit this information to Liz Stoddard. I'm sure that when she knows it, she'll call it off.
I'm afraid it's too late.
There's a chance. Surely there's a chance.
Yes, there is a chance.
I'm really not in the mood to see Bert.
Please talk to him for just a few minutes.
What does he want?
He wants to do something for you.
Hello, Bert.
Hello, Liz.
I only have a few minutes.
You may have more time than that.
What do you mean?
I won't go into a discussion on your motives for marrying Jason McGuire. All I want to do is make you aware of the kind of man he is.
I know what kind of man he is.
You know the things he's done.
I know all I need to know.
I've had some investigators checking him out. They came up with this.
What is that?
A report on the illegal activities he's been involved in.
Illegal?
Smuggling, stealing. Read it yourself.
No.
Please look at it, Liz.
No.
Why not?
Are you submitting proof of a crime to me?
I'm submitting proof to you of a man who has such a lack of decency and honesty that the true crime would be his marriage to you.
How dare you say that to me?
I didn't say it to insult you, Liz. I said it because I honestly believe you're being forced into a marriage.
You have no right to make such an assumption.
Please, Mrs. Potter, Burke is trying to help.
You'd help me by forgetting about me and about Jason Maguire.
Forget about Jason Maguire? Impossible. Well, now just what is it about me that's supposed to be forgotten?
He came to wish me well.
Oh, well, now that's very thoughtful of him. I came here hoping to talk her out of marrying you.
Please, Burke.
Well, did he succeed?
No.
Well, now, Stephen, it seems that you've failed at something, haven't you?
So far, I have.
Oh, I see. You intend to continue with the action?
I'm afraid I don't have any ammunition left.
Well, now, what sort of ammunition are you using?
Your character.
Ah, well, you see, now, that's a mistake. Because she's marrying me because of my character.
I'm inclined to agree with that.
But tell me, Mr. Devlin, just what aspect of my character are you attacking?
This aspect.
What's that?
Shall I read aloud?
Ah, no. Isn't that interesting?
That was all the information I was able to come up with on short notice. I'm sure I haven't even scratched the surface.
I can explain all of this, you know.
I was certain you could.
This? Does any of this really bother you?
No.
There you are, Mr. Devlin. I think you better have this back. It must have cost you a pretty penny. Have it encased in plastic or something. It's very artistic. Oh, and as long as you're here, I may as well invite you to the wedding tomorrow. It'll be a very nice ceremony. Perhaps you, among others, might care to shed a tear or two. Good night, my darling.
My name is Victoria Winters. Soon the sun will set on Collinwood, and the night, in its inexorable journey across the land, will plunge the ancient house into darkness. A darkness of the spirit. A darkness of the mind. A darkness of the will. And it will seem at times that light and truth have been banished forever, leaving behind the desperation and fear of people who do not know what the darkness holds.
Very soon, you're going to regret being here. You're going to regret being here very much. Pick up that book. I said, pick up that book!
Let go of me!
I will when you agree to pick up that book.
Thank you.
Now hand it to me. Well, did you find it interesting reading?
I didn't read any of it. I have to go.
I suppose you think it's a diary. A chronicle of my every act for the last 20 years.
Maybe.
I suppose you expected to find something in here that would prevent me from marrying your mother this evening.
I don't know if it's written in that book, Jason, but I know it exists.
Oh? And if it does exist, do you think I'm fool enough to write it down? Come on now, Carolyn. You must give me credit for more intelligence than that.
I don't give you credit for being anything but a fake.
Now that, I'm afraid, is a major mistake. Because as you now know, I am only all too real. And for an example, my marriage to your mother this evening will be quite real.
No, it won't be. Because you'll be forcing her into it.
And the fact that she will be Mrs. Jason McGuire will also be quite real.
Don't make me sick.
And my prerogatives as her husband will also be quite real, and I intend to exercise them to the fullest.
We'll see about that.
Ah, yes, we will. Would you like a little sampling of it right now?
What do you mean?
Well, now, I expected you to be married today to the worthy Mr. Buzz.
It's no business of yours whether I do or don't.
Ah, but it is, Carolyn.
I fail to see how.
Because I expect you to get married and leave Collinwood.
Are you telling me to leave my own house?
I'm telling you to leave my house.
Yours?
Exactly.
This house belongs to my mother.
This house belongs to Mrs. McGuire, and I am Mr. McGuire. And I'm telling you in so many words to get out. Now, is that clear enough?
I will not be thrown out of my own house.
I'm afraid it's a little bit late for you to have a voice in the decision.
We'll see about that.
Now, just how long did you think you could push me around? Ever since I got here, I've had nothing out of you. Nothing but insults and insinuations.
And all of it deserved.
I've done my best to get along with you.
The only way we can get along is for you to leave.
Yes, for one of us to leave, and I'm afraid you're elected. Now I want you out of this house tonight.
Tonight?
Yes. Don't make the mistake of not taking me seriously.
What will you do if I don't go?
Why, then I'll ask Mrs. McGuire to make the request personally.
She'd never do it.
No. You thought she'd never allow me into Collinwood, didn't you? And yet I'm here. And then you thought she'd never marry me, didn't you? But she is. You think she won't ask you to leave? How ridiculous.
I know she wouldn't.
Because of her love and loyalty to me, she can deny me nothing.
Love?
Yes. Now, if you'll excuse me, I must straighten out my things. And then I must dress. Because I'm getting married, you know.
Jason, that will never happen.
Stick around for a few hours. Oh, and you, meanwhile, you might utilize the time to pack up your own things. And now, will you excuse me? I do need a moment. Alone. So that I can contemplate the happiness I have to look forward to. Oh, and Carolyn. By the way, no doubt the wedding will be too moving for words. So I'll say it now.
Say what?
Goodbye.
National holiday? This evening, Mrs. Elizabeth Collins' daughter, of Collinsport, is going to marry Mr. Jason McGuire, of Nowhere. Why isn't everybody out celebrating?
Why don't you go home, Miss Stoddard? Don't you think you've had enough to drink?
Home. What's that? Finally, it's somebody. Oh, it's you.
What are you doing here?
Waiting for my husband.
Oh, no. Don't tell me you married that creep.
Not yet. But stick around.
Come on. I'm going to get you out of here.
It's what you think. And don't argue with me. I'm not in the mood for it.
Okay.
Hey, where are you going? Keep me a little company, can't you?
Not unless I can take you somewhere else and get you some coffee.
I told you I can't leave. I'm about to be bride, waiting for my about-to-be groom.
So you're really going to do it, huh?
I said I would, didn't I?
Yeah, but I wasn't sure I believed you.
My mother didn't believe me either. She got another thing coming. Thinks he can get rid of me.
What'd you say?
Nothing.
Okay, have it your way.
She probably thinks the same thing, too.
What?
I said she wants to get rid of me.
Who?
My mother.
3 seconds ago, you said she didn't think you'd go through with it.
Don't confuse me. Oh, but they both think they can get me out.
Carolyn, I thought you were the one that wanted out.
How can she do that to me? He's probably really the one that's making her do it. If it weren't for him, none of this would be happening.
Carolyn, you gotta try not to get so mad at everything.
Mad? Who's mad? Unless you mean crazy mad. I think that's where I'll go for my honeymoon. I think I'll go crazy. Let me have another.
You don't need another one.
Don't tell me what I need. I am not going to let him do this to me. I am not.
Look, Carolyn, if it's McGuire you're talking about, there's nothing you can do.
Isn't there?
As a matter of fact, you're marrying that creep Buzz would probably satisfy McGuire more than anything else.
Maybe I won't marry Buzz after all.
You mean that?
Maybe there's something else I can do.
Wait a minute, I'll go with you.
No, I'm all right.
You're not all right.
Yes, I am. For the first time in a long time.
I don't know where you're going, but I'm taking you.
All right. To Collingwood, please. I hear they're having a wedding. Else that I can do?
There's nothing else to do. Oh, wait. On the bureau, there's a handkerchief. May I have it, please?
Lovely.
It was my grandmother's. She had it at her wedding. And she gave it to my mother, and my mother gave it to me. Put it away.
You don't want it?
It's only supposed to be used for weddings. And this can hardly be called a wedding.
I understand.
I had it the day I married Paul Stoddard. I was so happy. I loved him so much. At least I thought I did. The life we were going to have together. I was so happy, Vicky. But that wasn't much of a wedding either. Or rather, much of a marriage.
Don't think about it.
Oh, I wish I didn't have any thoughts at all. I wish my mind were a blank. Free of thought. Free of feeling. Just empty.
It doesn't work that way. The less one tries to think of something, the more it seems to take over.
I know. Maybe I'll just go mad, and that'll be the answer to everything.
Please don't say that.
Oh, it would be a mercy, wouldn't it? Just no mind at all, nothingness.
Please, Mrs. Stoddard.
Don't worry. I don't deserve it. Mercy.
It's still not too late to call off the wedding, you know.
It was too late the day I met Paul. It was too late the day I married him. It was too late the day I killed him. Put the handkerchief away. Or maybe I should throw it away.
Throw it away?
Who will use it now? Carolyn? At her wedding?
Maybe someday someone will.
Oh, Vicky, where is she?
I don't know.
She's not going to marry that man, is she?
I don't know.
Isn't it enough that I ruined my life? Why did I have to ruin hers?
The marriage can be annulled.
Not that easy. It's not that easy to be free. It was that way with Paul. I was never free of him. Even when I found out the kind of a man he was, I was never free. Never for 1 minute of one night or one day. Why didn't you let me die?
I couldn't do that.
You go downstairs now.
I'd rather wait and go with you.
Please. I want to be alone for a few minutes.
All right.
I find it a curious invitation. It's a curious wedding. It should give you a great deal of satisfaction.
Why do you say that?
It is not a secret. This isn't a particular felicitous occasion for the Collins family.
And you think I'm here to revel in it, huh?
Well, aren't you?
No. He's here because I invited him. Glad you accepted. Join me? Mr. Devlin? Roger?
No, thank you.
Well, now, gentlemen, this is supposed to be a joyous occasion. Well, whatever you say. I wonder what's keeping the judge. I hope he won't be late.
Am I early?
Carolyn, I thought you'd gone out.
I'm back.
Well, your mother would be happy to see you. As, of course, I am.
I didn't know there would be anyone outside the family.
Mr. Devlin is here because I invited him. He seems to persist in the notion that the wedding will not take place, and I thought this was one way of convincing him.
I certainly hope so.
Ah, the judge. That means we can start on time. I'm sure you will have other plans later on.
Yes, I have plans.
Good evening.
Well, I see we're almost
all assembled.
Ah, Roger.
How are you, Judge?
I'm fine, thank you. We haven't seen you at the club lately. And this must be the groom.
Yes, a pleasure, Mr. McGuire. How do you do, sir? How do you do? Devlin, I didn't expect to see you.
Oh, I stray from the straight and narrow every once in a while.
Yes. Hello, Catalan.
Hello.
How pretty you have grown.
Thank you.
Well, where is the bride? Where is my dear Elizabeth?
She'll be right down.
Now, you must be Miss Winters.
Yes, how do you do?
Fine, thank you. And I must not leave without getting your signature as witness. We want this to be legal, don't we?
Yes.
Can I offer you a drink, Judge?
Oh, thank you.
Carolyn. Oh, don't look so surprised, Vicky. You don't think I'd miss my mother's wedding. No, of course not.
Vicky, are you sure that Liz doesn't want you to help her with something?
She wanted me to tell everyone that she'd be down in a minute.
What a beautiful bride she will be. I remember when she married Paul Stoddard in this very room. People gasped when she came through the door. She was so beautiful. And she still is. Oh, there was a fine crowd here that day. Not a murmur among them as they stood looking toward the door, waiting.
I'm sorry if I've kept you all waiting.
Nearly for 20 years, my dear, and it was worth every one of them. Don't you think so, dear? I have also spoken to you.
Carol.
Hello, Mother.
I'm so glad you could be here.
I knew you would be.
Ruth, you decided to come?
Yes.
We may as well start.
Yes, I think we may as well.
You join me, Elizabeth.
Judge, where do you want to stand?
Well, since this is an informal wedding, we will eliminate the preliminaries. If you would, you will stand in front of me.
Here.
Yes.
By me. I'll ask the usual questions and you'll give the usual answers. Then, Jason, you'll slip on the ring and after a few minutes it'll all be over.
Ah, no. It'll be the beginning of our happiness.
Happy.
Now, if you will just join hands. Do you, Elizabeth Stoddard, take this man, Jason McGuire, to be your lawful husband, to have and to hold, from this day forward, in sickness and in health, until death do you part?
Answer, I do, dear.
Answer?
Say simply, I do.
I...
Liz?
I know.
Liz?
No, I can't.
Leave her alone.
Wait. Elizabeth. What is it?
I killed Paul Stoddard. And that man was my accomplice.
Tom Bosley. Welcome once again to the magic world of radio. Jules Verne was writing over a century ago, yet because of his vision of the future, his stories today, 100 years later, are still science fiction. For although much of what he prophesied has already come true, many of his predictions still await discovery or proof. None more so than the story I bring you today. Our adventure, Journey to the Center of the Earth, was adapted from the Jules Verne novel, especially for the General Mills Radio Adventure Theater by Ian Martin. I shall return shortly with Act One. Welcome. Edit. Professor Otto Lidenbrock was a man of such determined purpose that when he dedicated himself to some single goal, nothing could stop him. This is the story of him, of his orphan nephew Axel, Vicky, the girl Axel loved, and of a strange old parchment with a cryptic message that catapulted the professor into leading all of them into the burning depths of hell.
Come.
Excuse me, Axel, but the housekeeper asked me... The professor is not here.
No, Vicky. Something must have delayed him. Don't tell me Martha has dinner ready to serve.
Almost. What time do you think it is?
I really don't know. I was busy studying these rocks, and I get busy. I don't notice the time.
Oh, you're as bad as your uncle. You live in a world apart.
Not me. Only the world you're in.
Axel.
Well, if you don't want anyone to hear, close the door.
What would Martha have to say about that? Or my guardian?
What the professor and his housekeeper don't know won't hurt them. Darling, quick, kiss me.
Oh, Axel. Oh, you're so nice. You'd be even nicer as a husband.
No, until you finish your medical studies and I my apprenticeship as a mineralogist to my uncle, we just have to wait.
Oh, it's so long, Axel.
To me, it seems longer than eternity.
Axel! Axel, my... there you are. Close the door.
Yes, Uncle.
Now,
Don't you recognize your own ward, Professor Lindebrook?
What? Oh, yes, of course. What are you doing in my study, Vicky?
Well, Martha sent me to tell you that the soup is ready.
To the devil with the soup, Ted. I'm busy, child. You go drink the soup. And now, oxygen.
Yes, Uncle. First I'll go with Vicky and explain
you
to Martha.
You will do no such thing. You will get that girl out of here and close the door so I can tell you what I have found. It's fabulous. Fabulous.
My uncle was curator of the Mineralogical Museum in Hamburg, and one of two or three of the most famous men in his field. He was a tall, vital man in his late 40s. He was renowned for his enormous intelligence, his monumental impatience, and a horrifying temper, more or less in that order.
Imagine, Axel, to find a treasure beyond price by accident at a bookstall. Look at it.
Heims Kringla of Snorro Turelsen?
But look at what I found inside it, dear boy. Now, what do you make of that?
A piece of paper?
No, parchment. Parchment.
Okay, very well, a parchment.
Read what is written there.
I can't. The letters look Icelandic.
Ah, wait, look at the signature. At least that can be read.
Arne Saknussemm.
One of the most famous alchemists of the 16th century.
But what's his connection with this book?
Don't you see, Arne must have owned this book. And this paper, he hid in it. I know enough to know. This is in code. It is a puzzle, a cryptogram. And I shall not rest until it is solved.
I wonder if I had realized then what solving it would mean, if I would have accepted the challenge. Because it was only going to catapult him, and with him, myself and the woman I loved, into an adventure bizarre and mystifying beyond belief.
132 letters of the alphabet in apparent disorder. What is the key? I have tried them in all sorts of mathematical combinations. Look at this sheet where I have written them vertically. Yes, come.
Forgive me, but you've been locked in here all day. Martha wants to know.
Tell Martha when we are ready for eating, I shall let her know.
Yes, Professor. No luck with the cipher.
How did you know about it?
Oh, why,
I told her about it, Uncle. There are no secrets between Vicky and me.
Oh? How is that?
You may as well know. We want to be married.
Well, you may as well know. I don't think either of you are ready for it.
You're quite sure of that, Professor? You know, Axel can solve your old puzzle any time he wants.
He can? Axel, how long have you known the answer?
For several days.
Then why haven't you told me?
Because I'm afraid of what it may mean.
Never mind that. How long are you going to keep me in suspense?
Supposing I made a bargain. If the news is worth it, would you agree to Vicky and me being married?
My dear boy, except that it is too soon, nothing would be nearer to my heart. But, well, is that what you want, Vicky?
With all my heart.
Confound it, all right, yes, now let us waste no more time. What is the key?
You stack the letters vertically. Now read them backwards.
Great heavens. I can't believe what I think I read.
It is in Latin, not very good Latin, but it could be read thus. Descend into the crater of Sneffels, over which the shadow of Scartaris falls before the kalends of July, bold traveler, and you will reach the center of the earth. I have done this. Arne Saknussemm.
The center? We shall do it too. You and I, Axel.
I suppose I cannot refuse that, but you must give me something in exchange. If we set out on this mad adventure, You must give your consent that Vicky and I can be married first.
Well, I suppose if it is what you both want.
Oh, you see, Axel, all it needed was the right kind of miracle.
When, Uncle?
Well, the sooner the better.
Tomorrow?
Yes, if you wish.
Of course, we weren't married the next day, but before the week was out. Poor Uncle Otto. He didn't quite know what he was letting himself in for.
What do you mean, take Vicky with us? Do you realize the dangers, the hardships, the inconceivable problems we may face buried deep in the bowels of the earth?
If you want Axel along, you must take me, too.
Want Axel? I need him. I need his fluency in languages.
She's a better mountain climber than either of us. She's trained in medicine, and she's no stranger to mineralogy. She'd be far more of a help than a hindrance.
Ah, so, so very well. I shall argue no further. There is not time. But you had better prepare yourselves. We leave the day after tomorrow. There is only one boat service to Iceland on the 30th of each month. Unless we catch that boat, we would be too late to discover... to discover a realm no man ever has set foot in before. The inside of the earth. All the way down to the very heart of it.
That was our honeymoon. That boat trip to Iceland. That cold, remote island in the North Atlantic. A honeymoon shadowed by the frightening thought of what was to come. At least for me, if not for Vicky.
Oh, Axel, will you stop looking so gloomy? Come and look at the moon with me.
I'm sorry, Vicky. It's a lovely moon and a nice cool breeze, and I just wish our voyage would go on forever.
How about our happiness?
There won't be much room for that once we reach Iceland.
You really think there is such a moment when the sun will cast a shadow that miraculously points to a strange opening nobody else has ever explored, and that once through it, we will all just walk casually to the middle of the earth?
No.
Then what's there to worry about?
My uncle was received and entertained in Iceland as one of the foremost mineralogists in the world, and it was a perfectly normal thing for him to request and receive a guide to lead us to the huge extinct volcano which dominates Iceland's skyline. Then came the incredible moment when at last the four of us, Hans Belke, our guide, my uncle, Vicky, and myself, having scaled the mountain itself and plunged deep into its volcanic crater, found there three chimneys, any of which, from their dark and forbidding promise, could be bottomless and might well be the passage we were seeking.
2 days we have sat here in this swirling fog, and there's no sun to cast a shadow to point out our path.
Is it so important after all, Uncle Otto?
Important? Only the realization of a life's dream for me.
Supposing the sun's shadow does point to a place where we could enter and try to get to the center of the earth, what difference would it really make? If we tried it, we'd all be burned to a crisp.
Ah, no. The heat is all on the surface. That was the theory of the man who is leading us to take this expedition, Arne Sapnussen, and who lived to prove it.
But, Uncle, if he achieved this, why has no one heard of him?
Because Arne Sapnussen was persecuted for heresy. And in 1573, his works were burned by the common hangman at Copenhagen.
Then are we the only ones who know his secret?
If he had one to preserve.
But he left no indication of which of these chimneys is our pathway to glory.
The sun would tell us if this overcast would just break and...
There's the sun now.
And the shadow...
Shoot. Look, it is pointing right to the center chimney. Just as Arne said it would.
You really believe all of this?
Oh, yes, there is our route to immortality. When we go down that rock chimney, we would be the first human beings to explore the mystery of inside our planet. And to reach at last the center of the earth.
Can you believe that somewhere there is a fissure in the Earth's crust through which people like you and me could descend 5,000 miles until we reach the very center of this spinning globe? And if you had the chance, since men have opened all the continents, sailed the seven seas, and conquered space, and revealed the mysteries of the ocean, since this is the only place left unexplored, could you resist the adventure? Four lonely human beings, dwarfed by the immensity of the crater in which they stand, are frozen at this special moment when the shadow of the great mountain Scartaris points directly to one of the three great chimneys reaching downwards into oblivion. The entrance, according to an alchemist dead for 500 years, to the passage that will eventually lead them to the very center of the Earth.
It looks bottomless.
I doubt it. If Arne Saknussemm went down it and came back to tell the tale.
If.
We can repel ourselves down there, but what about the food and supplies?
Ah, they would go down by themselves, Vicky.
What do you mean?
What chance? He has already roped them together.
He just threw it over.
It'll be waiting for us. Listen. Good. Our turn now.
Uncle, we can't go down there. It's vertical, like a chimney.
Oh, not quite.
Your uncle is right. No worse than any of the Alps I've climbed. I've been talking to Hans.
But you don't speak his language.
When it comes to mountain climbing, I do. Now look, the rope is hooked around this projection of rock, so it acts like a pulley. Hans will go down first till he finds a ledge or somewhere he can have footing. Then he will signal us to come down. All you have to do is take hold of both ropes and use your feet to push off against the mountain. Then you sort of slide down. Are you ready?
As ready as I'll ever be, I guess. There's no bottom to this.
Of course there is. Listen.
It sounds like miles.
Nonsense. I timed it. Adding the velocity of a falling object to a return speed of sound, I would estimate some 3,000 feet.
And how long is our rope?
400 feet. But it was double, so say 200.
Which only means we have to repeat what we have just done about 15 times before we reach the bottom of the chimney.
Oh, we're mad. That's impossible. We've got to go back.
It is a little late for that. Hans has already disengaged the rope to use for the next turn. And I doubt if any of us could climb back up without it.
My uncle was right. It took 15 times, hooking the rope around whatever projecting rock we could find, to reach the bottom of that dark, narrow, dreadful chimney in the rock. By the time we reached bottom, exhausted, the last of daylight was fading, and looking up, the hole we had climbed into far above our heads was little bigger than a silver dollar. It was like looking through a gigantic telescope at a tiny star. A star which flickered and then went out as all of us fell into an exhausted sleep.
Axel? Eh? Axel, wake up. Come to my boy.
I'm dizzy. I'm seeing stars.
Nonsense. It is just the daylight bouncing off the lava. Like a shower of sparks.
Where's Vicky?
She went up the chimney with Hans, you see. They are getting the bundle with our supplies loose where it caught on the rock.
Oh, yes. We're inside the mountain.
Right, but so far we haven't even penetrated the Earth's crust.
What do you mean?
We started down this tube from the crater of a mountain. We are only back to sea level.
Are you sure?
Look at the barometer. It shows the same air pressure at sea level. But as we go deeper and leave more air above us, its pressure will increase. And by measuring that pressure, we can calculate how deep we are.
If we can breathe by then.
Oh, we would descend gradually. And that way, our lungs would get used to the heavier air.
Look out below! We're going to drop the package!
Get over here, Axel, into the shaft opening. Okay, let's huggle!
Where does this tunnel lead?
Down to the center of the earth, I hope.
Okay, we're coming down now.
Uncle, look, be sensible. We've got to give this up. It doesn't make any sense anyway.
No sense? Why?
Because the deeper we go, the hotter it will get.
Oh, are you so sure?
Well, it stands to reason, since the center of the earth is nothing but liquid fire.
Ah, really? You have been there?
No, but according to scientific theory...
Ah, some scientists, but not all. For myself, I prefer to believe our 16th century alchemist, Arne Saknussemm, because he has been there. And more important, he came back.
Oh, what are you two arguing about?
Oh, if we were, my arguments have no weight.
Certainly not, since they are only speculation. Now, come, let us all have breakfast and press on with our quest. Well, Oxen, how do you find the temperature after these first days?
It's quite comfortable.
And
but...
you, Vicky?
Oh, I hadn't even thought about it.
But why should you? By the thermometer, it is just under 60 degrees.
Should it be more?
My nephew would think so.
Me? Why?
When we left the surface, it was 41 degrees Fahrenheit. But according to most authorities, there is a 1 degree centigrade rise in temperature for every 100 feet. So figuring the present rise in temperature by the Fahrenheit scale... Could you estimate how deep in the earth we have penetrated?
Well, that isn't very difficult. Less than 1,000 feet.
Except, my boy, and I promise you that my figures are correct, we are now 10,000 feet below sea level.
What does that mean, Axel?
It means we are far below the deepest mines ever sunk in the world. And that the temperature ought to be at least 178 degrees.
What?
So much for preconceived ideas about the inside of the earth, huh? Now, do you feel better about continuing with our search?
Water!
What did Hans say?
He said water. Whatever the temperature may be, we have only a 3-day supply of water. That's something no figures can change.
But as soon as we get below this stage of lava rock, we will find springs.
So, we're going on.
But certainly.
Well, there are 2 roads.
Both of them dark and narrow.
And there is nothing to be gained by hesitation. So, we will take the one to the east.
The second day in this gallery, we were all breathing with difficulty. And I stopped.
No, go on, go on.
I have to rest a minute. So does Vicky.
Oh, yes, I'm tired out.
What? Trampling over such easy ground?
Oh, it was easy. Till it started to go up instead of down.
Up?
Yeah, the slope has changed in the last hour.
What? How so? Well, it must go down again soon.
We're very low on water.
As soon as we get deeper, there will be plenty.
Oh, perhaps we should turn back, Uncle.
When we have come this far, when we are on the edge of making history, there is no turning back.
I'm afraid we haven't much choice. Ahead, it's a dead end. The passage is blocked.
Oh.
Very well, then. We should have taken the other arm of the fork. We must go back.
I will drag you through the mental and physical agony of those retraced steps. Before we got back to the cavern, we had to ration the water. And by the time we arrived, we were parched and so weary we were ready to drop. All of us, except Hans, whom nothing seemed to affect, arrived half dead at the junction of the 2 galleries.
Now come. We must pull ourselves together and try the other fork.
What? Are you mad? We must go back.
And give up this expedition just when success is almost assured.
The only thing that's assured is that if we continue, we'll all die.
Very well, then. You must take Vicky and Hans to help you climb. Perhaps you can make it out of the chimney.
What about you?
I shall go on.
And die?
I don't believe so. The lack of water is the only thing that stands in our way. And as a mineralogist, I have every hope that within hours we will reach a layer of granite. And there, water should be abundant.
Vicky?
I think we'd better go with him, Axel. Even if we made it back to the bottom of the chimney, we'd never be able to climb out. Wait a minute. Oh, what's that noise?
Noise? There is Hans.
I don't know, but... Shh.
Water! Water!
Water. Var?
Neda! Neda!
Come on. He says down below.
Where's the water?
It's behind the wall. A solid wall of granite. No way to get at it. Tons and tons of water. A torrent. A fountain of hope. And no way to get at it. No way. It's all over.
Are our friends to perish, buried alive, dead of thirst, when unlimited water is so near and yet beyond reach? Well, there's a limit to how much suspense I can honestly hold you under. Obviously, if the story is to be continued, they must survive. But how? Three of our discoverers are slumped in parched exhaustion deep under the earth, deeper than any human being has ever penetrated before. But the fourth, the quiet man of few words, Hans, the phlegmatic Icelander with his incredible physical endurance, has left the others, following the granite wall, listening to the sound of the torrent behind it. And now, faintly, the sound of his effort to save them reaches Vicky's ears first.
Oh, Axel. Axel, listen.
What? What, Vicky?
That sound.
A pickaxe. Where is Hans?
I don't know, Uncle. Pickaxe. He must be trying to break away the wall.
Water. I think he's found water.
Come on. Let's go.
Water. Oh, look, he's found it.
But give up.
What do you mean, be careful?
What is it doing?
It's hot. It's boiling hot.
But it's really cool. Then it hits the floor. Follow it down, and we can drink to our heart's content.
That precious jet stream of water was to be more to us than something to quench our thirst. Like Kublai Khan that we had all read in school, it led us through caverns measureless to man, down to a shining sea. But I am getting ahead of myself. On the 18th of July, 3 weeks after we had left the surface of the earth behind us, my uncle stopped to make some calculations.
Where are we, Uncle Otto?
Well, by my calculations, we are 213 miles southeast of Sneffels.
But that means we aren't under Iceland anymore.
No, my dear. The Atlantic Ocean is now above our heads, but some 48 miles above.
48 miles?
We must all realize by now that there is no way of turning back.
You mean this is our life? Forever?
Of course not, Vicky, if you have the faith I have. Remember, there was a man who went before, and he came back and lived to tell it. I must believe, so shall we.
I don't think anyone else believed that. The only thing that kept us from going mad was the sense of companionship. And then, Suddenly, it happened. We were hoarding our electricity, saving our lamps. And on this day, feeling along in the dark, the nightmare that lurked in the back of all of our minds happened to me. Vicky, you ask Uncle Otto if we can't stop a minute. Vicky? Vicky? Vic? Uncle Otto? Hans? Vicky? I was suddenly screaming, panic welling up and catching in the back of my throat. Then, with an effort, I got hold of myself. What a fool I was being. I had a sure way to find my way back to the others. All I had to do was follow the stream of water. I bent down, and to my horror and terror, I found nothing but dry granite. The stream was no longer at my feet. I went mad with panic, running back in the dark, screaming, Vicky! Vicky! Can you hear me? Uncle Otto! Hans! Please! Please! Ah! 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 When I came to, I had no way of knowing how long I'd been unconscious. My face was wet with tears and blood, for I'd cut my head when I fell. I was dizzy and half frantic with fear. Then suddenly, what was that? An explosion? Some subterranean earthquake? Oh, Lord, please don't let me die. Please don't let me be buried alive.
No, we won't give up. Fire the gun again.
It's Vicky. And Hans. Help. Help. That must be the gun. Why does it sound so strange?
But if he can't hear that gunshot, it is hopeless.
But I do. I do.
Won't give up. Give up. Give up.
Why can't they hear me? And why do they sound so strange? Wait. I see it. It's some trick of acoustics. Their voices are traveling along the wall, like the whispering gallery in St. Paul's Cathedral in London. If I put my mouth close to the wall and whisper, maybe... Vicky. Vicky, my darling. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Listen. That's Axel. Axel. My darling, darling, darling. My darling, where are you?
I don't know. I'm lost.
Axel, my boy. How wonderful to know you are alive at last. We have been hunting everywhere for you. Now, because there is a time lag in transmitting messages, let me get us together as soon as possible. I have my watch in hand. At the end of this, I will say your name, noting the exact second. The moment you hear your name, repeat it. The moment I hear it, I shall check the watch. By dividing the elapsed time, we will know just how far apart we are. Ready,
now came the agonizing wait. It was unbearable to know that my darling Vicky and the others were so near, and yet so...
You see, exactly 20 seconds. Now, half of that is 10, and at 1,020 feet a second, that makes 10,200, approximately 2 miles.
2 miles?
Now, all you have to do, Axel, is to find a path that takes you down. It is better that you come to us. I will tell you why. We are in a vast cavern, and all the cracks and fissures and galleries seem to radiate from here. So, on your way, boy. On your way.
I love you, Annabelle. Just hurry to us.
If our voices passed back and forth as they had, there could be no obstacle between us. So, weak as I was, I hurried along the corridor, guiding myself by touching the wall. But I made one mistake. I was careless of what was under my feet, and suddenly, it was as though the ground gave way beneath my feet, and I went slithering on loose rock, down, down, sliding, out of control, faster, faster, So suddenly the slide became a fall. I was jarred against projections, dropping down a vertical shaft till my head hit a sharp rock and all went black.
Hello, darling.
Oh, Vicky.
Oh, thank heaven. You're all right. You're alive.
I hear waves, and we're in the open. The sun is shining. Are we back outside?
On the contrary. You are now at a depth underground of approximately 100 miles.
Oh, and how far from Iceland?
Over 2,000 miles.
Then we're somewhere beneath London, or perhaps Paris?
Approximately.
Incredible. What's that hammering? What's that hammering I hear?
Come. Come and see. It is Hans. He is building a raft for us.
Out of what?
Oh, pine, fir, birch.
But there are no trees down here.
Somewhere on the shores of this sea there are, or were at some time. This is fossil wood, mineralized by the sea, driftwood. It floats, and it will make a fine raft.
Good dog, Hans.
Good dog, Hans. But why is Hans building this raft?
Well, so we can follow the example of that well-known chicken and get to the other side.
I wish someone could explain this other world to me.
If Uncle Otto can't, nobody can.
Where does the light come from?
Well, the best I can do is suggest that it's a kind of luminance from electric forces. A sort of constant lightning.
What about those clouds?
Water vapor in suspension.
How high are they?
Oh, a good 12,000 feet, I'd say.
How large is the sea?
At least as big as the Mediterranean. We've been sailing for nearly a week, and there's no sign of the other shore.
And all this inside one huge cavern in the deeps of the earth? It's beyond belief.
It was 2 days later that we made land in a heavily wooded area with mountains rising steeply almost from the shore. In one of them, we found a cave and another miracle. The name of Arni Saknussemm chiseled in granite. But less than 100 feet into the cave, the way was blocked by a gigantic rock, which fitted into the passage like a stopper in a bottle. Hans began to chip at it with his pickaxe.
Now, it is hopeless. Even you could never cut through that, Hans.
No, but Axel can.
Axel? How?
Let him answer that for himself.
What have you got there, Axel?
50 pounds of our explosive. If we can't cut through the rock, we can blow it out of there. Hans, you cut a hole big enough. For Trafflig.
Yeah, for Trafflig. Excellent indeed. Now, set your charge, Axel, while I make a slow fuse. That will give us time to get away from here before it explodes. Everybody aboard.
Oh, yes.
All right, then, push off and pedal.
I don't think there would be any danger.
Better to be safe than sorry.
The fuse burned faster than I expected.
That's what I meant by being safe.
What happened?
We're being pulled back to shore!
Hold on, everybody! For your lives!
What is it? It looks like a bottomless pit.
There must have been an abyss on the other side of the rock. The sea is pouring into it, and we are being swept with it.
Hold me, Axel! Hold me!
Hang fast to the raft! We're being sucked into the center of the earth! The next 48 hours were a nightmare not to be believed. With the speed of an express train, the current carried us down on a wave, tearing through between the walls of the tunnel. We were tossed and battered about, but held on grimly. Nothing worse could happen to us, we supposed, until...
Oh, what is it, Uncle?
We're going up!
How?
The water has reached the bottom of the abyss and is now seeking its own level. It's carrying us up with it.
We'll be drowned when it reaches the roof.
So, there is a shaft over there. Paddle, Hans. Paddle.
Yeah, the water. It's boiling now.
I'm suffocating.
Like a furnace. Pray, my little ones, pray. That is our only hope. feet has sprung us in the path of boiling lava, and it has mixed up with the water. It is an eruption, and we are going to be thrown into the air, hurled along with acid cinders and the whirlwind of flame. But we are lucky.
You call this lucky?
It is the only way we have a chance of returning from the center of the earth.
So our four adventurers came back to the surface the same way they had entered, through the crater of a volcano. Burned, bruised, tattered, and exhausted, they were blown out of the volcano Etna in Italy, for that was how far they had traveled through the center of the earth. But they lived to tell the tale, and that is how Jules Verne's book begins and ends.
Our cast included Ian Martin, Don Scardino, and Jada Rowland. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown.
Now, from the makers of Cold Water Omo, this will be the reserve compartment, Mr. Secretary.
Ah, yes, definitely. This will do. It has an air to it.
We thought perhaps the corner seat over there.
Yes, he likes to face the engine. Nice view. Push button service. Excellent. The old carriage is splendid. You may want to thank you personally. You'll be on the train, I suppose.
I'm afraid not, Mr. Secretary. We're on our usual run in the other direction.
We shall be passing each other then.
So we will. At 8:57, precisely. The Avengers. John Steed and Emma Peel, The Avengers.
Final episode of this story, in which John Steed and Emma Peel prevent disaster striking again and put a stop to a diabolical train of events. Mrs. Peel, searching for the missing John Steed, had called at Chase Hulk to enlist the help of Old Crew, the self-appointed owner of the station. They hadn't got a lot further forward, and another special security man, George Warren, had been killed. But the train from Norborough had made an unscheduled stop at Chase House, and Mrs. Peel had bundled Old Crew aboard. They'd begun a systematic search of the train, hoping to find Steed. But Steed was held captive in the galley, firmly handcuffed to a steel chair. The ticket collector, who turned out to be the arch-villain of the piece, was explaining to Steed how he intended to kill the Prime Minister.
Yes, Mr. Steed, 8:57. At that time, we'll be running through Durbridge Station. Durbridge. Population, 2,413. Principal industry, manufacture of glass eyes for teddy bears. Fame, non-existent. But after tonight, there won't be a person in the civilized world who hasn't heard of it. After tonight. After I've pressed this button at 8:57.
The ticket collector's hand hovered over the button.
A bomb, Mr. Steed. Your Prime Minister is sitting on a bomb.
Activated from this train. You press the button as the train passes.
At top speed. We shall be a mile away by the time it explodes. The end of a hard road. A long road. 21,214 miles to be exact. Shuttling back and forth.
Mobile headquarters. Ingenious. Defies detection. Nice way to make contact as well.
Our agent merely boarded train. What could be more innocent?
Very ingenious.
Just another few miles, Mr. Steed. That's all.
old crew, out in the corridor, had been trying to find the ticket collector. He followed an attendant who approached a restaurant car and gave a knock that was obviously a signal. Old crew advanced, tried the handle of the door. It was locked. Crew thought he'd better find Mrs. Peel and report. While inside the restaurant car, the attendant walked through to the galley.
It could be trouble, sir.
What do you mean, trouble? We're almost there.
It's the woman who lost £5, sir.
What about her?
She's on the train in compartment 4767.
I see.
A friend of yours, Steve?
Yes. Very good friend, actually.
Well, we must take care of her. The bride is still on the train, isn't she, groom?
Next compartment. Splendid. I'll talk to her.
The collector turned to some rather complicated mechanism that stood on a table near the bomb button, fiddled with it, and spoke into a small microphone. The bride, in her compartment, heard an urgent whisper from the air vent above her head.
We have an enemy in the next compartment. The woman who is always prying upon us. See to it. Kill her now.
The bride seemed to show no surprise at all. She merely got up, took an automatic from her handbag, and slipped into the corridor. Mrs. Peel appeared to be dozing when the door of her compartment stood open.
Oh, so it's you. It'll be a pleasure.
The bride leveled the gun. Mrs. Peel swung an elegant leg and kicked the gun out of her hand. As though with a continuation of the same movement, Mrs. Peel launched herself across the compartment, butting the bride squarely in the midriff with her head. Thoroughly winded, the bride collapsed. Mrs. Peel grabbed her and threw her into the corridor.
You'd have done better to have stayed in your do not disturb compartment. I think if we tuck you under the seat, you might stay out of trouble.
In the operation galley of the train, the ticket collector had heard the sounds of the attack and realized that the bride had got the worst of it. John Steve grinned.
Hooray! Bravo! Oh, sorry. My passenger hasn't got the better of me. I do apologize.
Groom,
you'd better go and deal with things.
It'll be a pleasure. Nothing but a pleasure.
The groom left the galley, pausing only to pick up what looked like an innocent tray of tea things. Meanwhile, old crew had found Mrs. Peel storing the bride under a seat.
Mrs. Peel, there are rules about these things, you know.
I'm just keeping British Railways tidy.
What happened?
We had a difference of opinion. We didn't agree.
What about?
Well, whether she should shoot me or not. How are you, crew?
Mrs. Peel. Bum, diddy, bum, 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 bum.
I like it. It's catchy. I can't keep making the top 10.
No, you don't understand. The door to the restaurant, the one at least to the galley. It's locked, but there's a special knock to get in.
Don't tell me, let me guess. Boom, diddy, boom, boom.
Boom, boom.
Right, stay here. Keep an eye on the bride and leave this to me.
Mrs. Peel made it to the restaurant car in double quick time. She approached the door.
Come.
The groom stood in the doorway. He held a tray in one hand. The teapot on the tray was the other. The spout of the teapot pointed straight at Mrs. Peel.
A teapot gun. Dinky little things, really, isn't it? Very effective for hold-ups in cafes, trains. Things where orthodox guns are a bit obvious. Do back up, dear lady. I'm afraid you've been the teeniest bit too inquisitive.
Shouldn't you be at a wedding or something?
Oh, that's just a disguise, a cover. They call me the groom. A session with me and people forever hold their peace, so to speak.
Fascinating.
I have a compulsive death wish. Other people's.
Really?
Mrs. Peel made a sudden movement backwards. The bullet from the teapot gun missed Mrs. Peel by a fraction of an inch. It shattered the glass of the window behind her.
Vandalism.
But it should show you that I mean business. Open the door.
The door?
Yes, that one. The outside one. Much nicer if your death looks like an accident. An unfortunate fall. Funny, really, being charged with the groom and at heart I'm really an undertaker. Now, let's get this over with.
Mrs. Peel appeared considerably affected. She swayed as though about to faint.
Oh, dear, the weaker sex.
What?
Mrs. Peel delivered a beautiful uppercut. The teapot gun flew out of the open doorway. The tray crashed to the floor. Mrs. Peel waded in. The groom grabbed and threw the struggle and pushed Mrs. Peel through the door. She replied by bringing her knee up viciously. The groom doubled up, tried to regain his balance by reaching for the door. He missed, tottered on the brink, and fell out of the carriage into the night.
Best
man, I think.
Mrs. Peel reached out and grabbed the door, pulling it closed.
Oh, Mrs. Peel, don't you know it's extremely dangerous to lean out of a train while it's in motion?
We're not quite finished with danger. The restaurant car.
They made their way to the restaurant car. The door had been left open. The train roared on into the night.
Do you happen to have the right time, Mr. Steele?
I make it 8:55.
Another couple of minutes and the two trains will pass. We're running right on time. Splendid.
The corrector removed the cover from the bomb button. His fingers tapped on the table. He could hardly keep from pressing the button prematurely. Mrs. Peel, moving through the restaurant car to the galley, found herself facing one of the attendants. She said,
"Evening."
And hit him.
Watch out, Steve! The other one's gonna go!
Kill him! Kill him! Kill him!
Steve gripped the steel chair with his handcuffed hand and swung it at the other attendant.
The bomb!
Emma Peel sprang forward, grabbed a wire mesh in tray, and inverted it over the button. The ticket collector thrust her finger through the mesh, trying to press the button.
Hey,
oh, no, no!
It's now! Now! The time is now!
John Steed got an arm round the ticket collector's throat and pulled him steadily away from the control panel. The other train roared by and vanished into the night.
The danger's passed.
The ticket collector collapsed in a heap. And at that point, old crew entered.
The communication cord! Pull the communication cord! Yeah!
Oh!
Old crew pulled that communication cord. About 10 yards of the stuff came away in his hand.
Oh, not insane! They don't build them like they used to. Disgusting, I call it disgusting.
Supper might wait for Steve.
Delightful, Steve. Plenty of traffic on the road.
Yes. People should drive more carefully in this wet weather.
There you are, you see. I mean, look at that idiot.
We could park the car over there at the railway siding. Look what that poster says. Huh? It's safer by rail.
Have a good evening and come back again next week. This has been Bill Holwig from West Texas for Broken Sea Audio Productions. www.brokensea.com. The music for tonight's episode was composed by Brian of Seraphic Panoply and Stevie Farnaby.